Okay, good morning, everyone. First of all, it's an incredible kavod, a really wonderful honor to be here with you this morning. I very much enjoy all the teaching opportunities that I have through it, both our Wednesday morning shir, Baruch Hashem, as well as the various Yimei Iyun. And I want to be makir tov to all of you for coming out on a Sunday morning, which I know for many today is an exceptionally busy day, being that there's been a simcha hiatus for the last 33 days. Baruch Hashem, there are many social obligations today, simcha obligations today, but it's wonderful to begin the day with a little bit of Talmud Torah. When Mr. Shulman asked me to participate in this Yom Iyun, so it was framed as a Yom Iyun for Shavuos, an opportunity to prepare for Kabbalas HaTorah. So that's the direction I started preparing it, but then I quickly realized that the Yom Iyun fell out on Lag BaOmer. So you can't have a Yom Iyun on Lag BaOmer and not focus on Lag BaOmer. So what I'd like to try to do this morning is develop a Lag BaOmer related theme that we will then tie into Shavuos, recognizing that the 2 days are actually inextricably linked, and through that develop a greater appreciation for Kabbalas HaTorah and what it is that we are trying to accomplish on the Yom Tov of Shavuos. Everyone has a sheet? Okay, if you don't have a sheet, I believe that there's a pile right when you walk in. So be with number one. The Shulchan Aruch writes, Noagim shelo lisa isha ben Pesach la'atzeres ad Lag BaOmer. The minhag is we don't get married until Lag BaOmer, between Pesach and Lag BaOmer. Why? Mipnei she ba'oso zman mesu tamidei Rabbi Akiva. Because in this particular time of yours, when the students of Rabbi Akiva died, and we'll talk about that story in just a moment. If you skip a line, the Rama says, by the Haggah, Mihu milag ba'omer ve'elecha kol shari. But from Lag ba'omer and on, all is permitted. Okay. In number two, the Shulchan Aruch goes on. Noagim shelo lehistaper ad Lag ba'omer. The minog is that we don't go ahead and take a haircut until Lag ba'omer. Sha'omrim sha'az pasku lamos. Because it is said that at that point in time, the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. Haggah, remember the Haggah is always the Ramah's gloss, the Ramah's footnote. So the Ramah, by the way, the Ramah whose yard site is today as well, Lag BaOmer. So the Ramah writes, Biyom Lamed Gimel, on the 33rd day of the Omer, Marbim Bo Kitzas Simcha, we celebrate on this particular day, Ve'ein Omrim Bo Tachanun. And in Tefillah, in Davening, we omit Tachanun. So the question is obvious, and it is, the question is not so obvious, but it still is, what's the question? According to what we just read in the Shulchan Aruch, we observe morning practices, without getting into all the different minhagim, but we observe morning practices from Pesach until Lag BaOmer. And at Lag BaOmer, everything stops, why?
The students stop dying.
Does that make sense to you? Sounds a little bit strange that we rejoice because people stopped dying. I understand if the Shulchan Aruch would have written that we observe mourning practices until Lag BaOmer, and then we cease those practices because the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying. But to say, and as I put the Ramah, Mar bin bo kitzas simcha, you know, today's little Labor Day, today is nice, the truth is, Lag BaOmer, for some unexplainable reason, we had a beautiful kumzitz and bonfire by our shul last night, and so many people came over to me and said, Rabbi, it's such a wonderful event, by the way, why are we doing this? Right, what's up with this? Right, alright, so everybody knows there's a little bit of a shul by Yochailu. What is it? What is it? The simcha of Lag BaOmer is a very amorphous simcha. And yet here you have the Ramah seems to link it to the cessation of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. The question becomes, why is the cessation of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva a cause for simcha? See, interestingly enough, so perhaps we can suggest on a simple level, if you look at number three, maybe the simcha of Lag BaOmer is related to something else other than the cessation of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Maybe we could split it. Maybe there's a concept that we cease our mourning practices because the students of Rabbi Akiva stopped dying, but the simcha is related to something else. So what could the simcha be related to? Let's take a look at number three. The Chasam Sofer writes, Ulefi de'isa b'medrash, shemiyom shekala hacharara, shotziyo mimitzrayim, Holchu gimel yomim below lechem. The achakach yarat Haman. Im kein hayahoradas Haman biyom lamid gimel baomer. Ruuya laasos lazeh zecher tov. So the Chasam Sofer advances an amazing idea. We're not going to get into all the calculations today. You'll just take my word for it. But the Chasam Sofer writes something amazing. That when the Jews left Egypt, remember, they left with provisions. It was basic provisions. It was bare bones provisions, but provisions nevertheless. And their provisions lasted them until the 33rd day of the Omer, at which point the man began to fall. So writes the Chasam Sofer so beautifully that Lag BaOmer is the day that the man began, and that's the man that sustained us for the next 40 years in the desert. So according to the Chasam Sofer, one could suggest we cease our mourning practices today on Lag BaOmer, because again, the students of Rabbi Kiva stopped dying, but the Simcha is related to another event, i.e. the beginning of the miraculous process of the life-sustaining man. Okay, one possibility. Another possibility, number four, is that maybe the Simcha of Lag BaOmer is related to the mysterious circumstances surrounding the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So take a look at number four. So we see over here, So number four, we're not going to quote this entire thing, but it's just interesting to look at. Get the right page here. Take a look at number four. Kach ne'emar b'zohar chelek gimel. Lamdinu ba'ose yom sh'Rabbi Shimon rotza lehestalek min ha'olam v'hayu misadir dvar. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, but the story goes something like this. On the day that Rashbi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was going to leave this world, which was Lag BaOmer, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai had an entire body of mystical knowledge that he had not shared with anyone. And on the day that he was going to leave this world, he realized that he had to share it with others, or otherwise what would happen? That knowledge would go to the grave with him. You have to understand that once upon a time when the oral law was actually oral, whatever a teacher was able to give over to a student, that's all the student has. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai realizes he's about to leave this world. He has this incredible, voluminous body of mystical knowledge. And if he doesn't give it over to his students, now it's going to be lost forever. And the Medrash, the Zohar actually goes on to explain that on that particular day, he got his son, Rabbi Elazar, as well as his primary disciples, gathered around his bed, and he taught them the mystical secrets of the Torah, which later on became known as the Zohar. The Zohar. Originally it was called the Idra Zuta, Idra Rabba, the small body of knowledge, the larger body of knowledge, but ultimately it becomes known as the Zohar. Interestingly enough, just so you should know, this is part of the symbolism of the bonfire on Lag BaOmer as well, right? Why do we light a bonfire on Lag BaOmer? So the Zohar brings down that on Lag BaOmer, the day that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was to leave this world, there was an incredible amount of knowledge that he had to impart on his students. He knew he was going to leave the world before the day was out. There simply were not enough hours in the day for him to impart all of the knowledge. And the Zohar writes, an incredible miracle occurred, that the day was elongated. The day was elongated. And we make a zecher. We do a remembrance to that miracle by lighting the bonfire, by lighting the fire, showing that there was more light in this day than a normal day, because Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai needed the extra time to impart the knowledge to his students. Lag BaOmer is the day that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai left this world. So some want to suggest that the celebratory tone of Lag BaOmer is rooted in the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Now this is strange on a number of different reasons. On the most basic level, we don't celebrate death, right? Judaism is not a death-centric religion. There are other religions that believe that man ultimately builds up his entire life in order to die, and that dying is the greatest sanctification of God's name. Yes, we do have a concept of dying al kiddush Hashem, but that's not what we aspire to. What we aspire to is to live al kiddush Hashem. In fact, interestingly enough, Rav Shamshon Yuval Hirsch explains that's why there are such strict laws governing Kohanim. coming in contact with death. It's an amazing thing. If you look, for example, at a church. So if you look at churches, not that I've done a study in churches, but if you look at many churches, you'll notice there's almost always something that's attached to a church, and it is a cemetery. A cemetery. You don't find it in shuls. You found it in Europe a little bit more, but that was because of lack of space. Right? Because why? Because in some religions, death is glorified. Judaism does not believe in the glorification. Death is an inescapable truth, but we don't look forward to it. We don't aspire to it. We do not consider that the crown jewel of man's accomplishment in this world. That's when all accomplishment comes to us. Our Hirsch says that's why Kohanim, who are supposed to teach us how to live, Kohanim are supposed to be our religious mentors. They must be as far away from death as possible. And that's why the Kohen Gadol, who is the teacher of teachers, cannot even come into contact with death for his own relatives, for his own family. So what does it mean we celebrate the death of Rashbi? We're not really celebrating the death, but what we understand is that because Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai left this world, he was forced to reveal an entirely new body of knowledge to the Jewish people, a body of knowledge that became another guiding light for Am Yisrael. We celebrate the fact that as a result of his death, so Klal Yisrael got this whole body of mystical knowledge. So this could also be why we have the celebration of Lag BaOmer. So again, just to be clear, so it could be that we could divide. The cessation of mourning practices on Lag BaOmer is related to what? The cessation of the death of Rabbi Akiva's students. Do we celebrate that fact? No. Celebration is related to what? Right? See, either it could be Chassam Sofer falling of the man, or the fact that as a result of the death of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai's yard site, again, we're not celebrating the yard site, but we're celebrating the fact that as a result of his death, he was forced to reveal this body of knowledge to the Jewish people, and we are the beneficiaries of this newfound knowledge. But the question is there something deeper? And I promise, we're going to come back to Shavuos. I just feel that sometimes Lag BaOmer doesn't get its fair shake. You know, I'm an advocate for Lag BaOmer. You know, because it kind of just gets swept under the rug because we're so busy with Tzira, so busy with Shavuos, so busy with Pesach. So is there something deeper that's unfolding on this particular day? Let's take a look at number five. There's a Gemara Maseches Yevamos, and a Gemara that you're all familiar with. Can you all hear me okay? Yeah, I'm going to try to... Yeah, okay. A little bit of my... So number five. So the Gemara says the following. Disanya, Rabbi Yeshua Omer. Rabbi Yeshua says the following idea. Nasa Adam Isha Bialdusa, Yisa Isha Biziknusa. If a person was married in his youth, a person should also get remarried in his older age. Okay? Hayu Lobanim Bialdusa, Yihye Lobanim Biziknusa. If a person had children, excuse me. Thank you for the water. If a person had children in his youth, should also have children in his old age. Why? Because Shlomo Melech writes in Koheles. This is before yeshiva tuitions, I guess. Right? So the right Shlomo Melech writes, Baboker zara azarecha. In the morning, literally plant your seeds. Ula erev atanech yadecha, and in the evening don't withdraw your hand. So the Gemara is understanding that Shlomo HaMelech's morning and evening are metaphorically referring to the different stages in life. That morning is referring to youth, and evening is referring to advanced age. Why? So Shlomo HaMelech says, even if you planted in the morning, make sure you continue to plant in the evening. Why? Ki in cha yodeya eze zeyikasha. Hazeh ozeh. Because the truth is in life, one of the greatest difficulties we all encounter is you could put in all of the right amount of hishtatos. You could put in all of the right amount of effort, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to get the desired results. So Shlomo HaMelech therefore is giving us good advice. Plant as much as you can. Because you never know what is going to sprout. Hazeh? Ozeh? Is the morning planting going to work? Or is the evening planting going to work? And what's the best case scenario? Vim shneim ke'echad. And if both of your seedlings sprout, tovim. then wonderful. Taba alecha bracha. Rabbi Akiva comes along and says something amazing. Lama Torah b'al yuso. If a person went ahead and learned Torah in their youth, yilmad Torah b'zignuso. A person should also learn Torah in their old age. Hayulo tamidim b'al yuso. If a person went ahead and had students in his youth, yihielo tamidim b'zignuso. Should also make sure to create students, to establish students in his older years. Shene Amar, and Rabbi Akiva quotes the same pasuk from Koheles. So the Gemara now is intrigued by this. You know, these kind of statements, understand, and if anyone needs sheets, there are sheets right when you write by the entrance to the shul. The Gemara is intrigued by this because these are such profound life statements. You know what Shlomo Melech is saying? Is even if you did things in your youth, and they didn't work out, don't give up. Don't give up. Keep trying. Because even if it didn't work out in your youth, maybe it'll work out in your old age. Or even if it did work out in your youth, don't give up from accomplishing more. So the Gemara is intrigued by this. Rabbi Akiva, what happened in your life that forged this identity, that forged this approach to life? So the Gemara says, they said about Rabbi Akiva, and this is a famous story, Shneim asar elef zugim talmidim hayulo l'Rabbi Akiva mikavas adan tipras. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students from Givas to Antipras. So really from one corner of the world to the next, or really one corner of Eretz Yisrael to the next. And what happened? V'kulan mesu b'perek echad mipnei shelo nahagu kavod zelazeh. And they all died during the same period of time because they did not exhibit proper respect to one another. Now, normally, you've all heard this Gemara before, I'm sure, and the focus normally is what happened with the students of Rabbi Akiva. We're not going to focus on the students of Rabbi Akiva this morning, we're going to focus on Rabbi Akiva. V'haya ha'olam shame. V'haya ha'olam shame means what? Means what? The world was in a potential state of desolation. Now, what does that mean? The 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva were who? Were who? With the future leaders of Klal Yisrael. With the future leaders of Klal Yisrael. So when they died, there was an existential threat to the future continuity of the Jewish people. There are multiple times throughout our history when it's not just the pshat that something bad happened, but we're actually concerned, will there be a tomorrow? We had moments like that during the destruction of the first and second Beis HaMikdash. We had moments like this, death of Rabbi Akiva's students. We had moments like this just less than 70 years ago during the Holocaust when there was an existential threat. Will there still be a Jewish people tomorrow? So V'haya Olam Shamei doesn't just mean Nebuch, 24,000 Jews died. There was, without leadership, there is no people. The world was desolate. Ad Sheba Rabbi Akiva Eitzel Rabosinu Shebedarom. So Rabbi Akiva came to the rabbis in the south. Now just understand, context is everything. When, bless you, when is this story occurring? So listen to this. This story occurs less than 20 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So understand what this means. When the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, what was the consolation? What was the consolation? That the Navi told us that it will only last 70 years. We knew that there was an expiration date on diaspora. The overall majority of people still didn't come back, but that doesn't matter. Even when we were being led out, we knew that there was an end in sight. So if you were a young person at the time of destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a strong potential, that you would see the rebuilding of the second temple. When the second Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, what is the scariest aspect of that destruction? There's no consolation prophecy. I mean, there is a consolation prophecy that one day things will get better, but we have no idea when that one day is actually going to be. So this event occurs 20 years after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, which also tells us, well, so you can imagine, the ashes of the Beis HaMikdash are still smoldering. Jewish continuity is still in peril. And to compound all of the present realities, 24,000 of the future leaders of Klal Yisrael are now all wiped out. So what does Rabbi Akiva do? He comes to the rabbis in the south, Vishnalahan. So what did Rabbi Akiva do? He established a new class of students. And who were they? Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon. By the way, who is Rabbi Shimon? It's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai was the student of Rabbi Akiva. V'Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua, v'heim heim ha'amidu Torah osa sha'a. And they are the ones who re-established Torah in that particular point in history going forward. And the Gemara then goes on to explain, they all died between the period of Pesach and Shavuos, which of course gives rise to all of our mourning practices. So interestingly enough, if you take a look at number 6, so the Pri Chadash comments and he says over here, L'simcha, oh, you want to know why we celebrate on Lag BaOmer? Al chameshes hatalmidim shehosif Rabbi Akiva biyom zeh v'lo mesu. You know why we celebrate? For the 5 new students that Rabbi Akiva established on this day, and these 5 students did not what? Didn't die. Same problem, right? What's the problem with that? Also sounds strange. So now, alright, the truth is, this is not as bad as at least celebrating for the stoppage of death. But now this is saying now, Rabbi Akiva made 5 students and they didn't die. I understand breathing a sigh of relief. But again, we're still back to our original question, which is why are we celebrating? Why is the cessation or the absence of death a celebration for Lag BaOmer? So I think to appreciate what's unfolding in this Gemara, we need to do a little bit of a study on Rabbi Akiva. Because the Gemara is telling us something exceptionally powerful here. Just so you understand, Rabbi Akiva is an old man. Rabbi Akiva is a very old man. You know, you don't establish 24,000 students like that. Right? 24,000 students takes years and years and years of work, and an entire life's work is wiped out in the span of 7 weeks. Right? Or some section thereof. We have to try to understand who Rabbi Akiva is in order to appreciate what's unfolding in this Gemara. So take a look at number 7. So I want to share with you what I think really is one of the most inspirational stories that we have in our collective history. And it's the story of Rabbi Akiva and Rachel. But what I want to show you is there are 2 different versions of this story. There's one version as brought down in the Talmud, in the Gemara Maseches Ksuvos, and there's another version that's brought down in the Medrash. They're not contradictory, but they each fill in the blanks of the other. So we're going to go back and forth between the 2 versions. Take a look at number 7. We'll start with the Gemara. Rabbi Akiva, Raya de Ben Kalba Savuahava. Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd, and he was a shepherd of Kalba Savua. Now, you might be asking yourself, Kalba Savua sounds like a little bit of a strange name. What's Kalba Savua? What does it mean? Satiated dog. Now, I know parents sometimes have difficulty choosing names, right? But that, I have yet to see that in one of the baby name books, right? The satiated, oh, you look like a little shefala, satiated dog. Hey, so, what does it mean? Where did he get that name? That was a nickname, the Gemara says. He was so exceptionally wealthy that the poorest person who would have been as ravenous as a starving dog came into his home and he would take care of them. So they called him the satiated dog, really representing his tzedakah. I don't know what his real name was. So Rabbi Akiva was the shepherd of Kalba Savua. Chazise Barte Dahavatzliya Umali. So Kalba Savua had a daughter who's only later on identified as Rachel. And Rachel sees this young man, this young shepherd, that he's tzni'i. Tzni'i means what? He's modest. He's modest. Ma'ali. Ma'ali? He's got a lot of ma'alis, right? He has some redeeming character traits. Now, why is this interesting? The Gemara talks about that often the lowest class of people were the shepherds. The shepherds were known to be lewd. They were known to be immoral. They were known to be that you have to watch them for theft. So here you see someone, which of course is interesting considering that all of our greatest leaders began as shepherds, but you'll do your homework on that. In any event, so she sees that he's a shepherd, but yet she sees somehow, what's interesting is it's not like they were talking or they were interacting, but somehow she perceived, she just saw in him a certain humility, a certain modesty, certain modesty. Amrale. So what does she say to him? And Rachel is clearly a very forward woman. I mikhadash nolach. Ozlos lebeis rab. Now, here's what's interesting. Rabbi Akiva was an ignoramus. Now, not only was he totally ignorant, he was actually already married before. Rabbi Akiva was married one time already. His first wife died, and he actually had, he had one child or two children from a first marriage. They were already older. He was significantly older than Rachel. But Rachel sees him. She says, look, I'll make you a deal. I'll marry you on the condition that you go off to yeshiva and learn something. Okay? Amar la, in. So apparently he didn't need too much coaxing, right, Rabbi Akiva? Okay. They got married. Actually, kiddushin means they affected the initial stage of marriage. Without getting too technical, marriage is comprised of two parts, kiddushin and nisun. We do this all together under the chuppah, but essentially when a man gives a woman a ring, that's kiddushin. That creates a bond of husband and wife, but they're not permitted to live together. Only after nisuin, which we do as sheva brachos, yichud afterwards, then husband and wife are permitted to maintain a normal marital life. So it sounds like what happened over here is they did kiddushin in secret, and he went off to yeshiva. Shama avua, kalba savua got wind of this, afka mi beise. He threw his daughter out of the house, adra hanna'a minichas. Now they throw her out of the house, but he adjured her. He imposed a neder upon her that would prevent her from getting any kind of benefit from his estate. Okay. Now look at the Medrash. Look at the Medrash's view of these events. Number 8. Same story, just above a different vantage point. Amru, ben mem shana haya v'roa ben kaba sevuhai. First of all, the Medrash inserts an age. Rabbi Akiva was 40 years old at the time of this story, and he was a shepherd. Ro'a soho bito shaya tzano mikho roa shabes abiyo. She saw that this man was more modest than all of the other shepherds. Amra, now look what the Medrash says. I'm in number 8, second line. Amra, Ra'uizeh, Shiyehe Mora Hora'a B'Yisra. So amazingly enough, in the Gemara, all Rachel seems to see is the fact that he's modest, he's humble, and that's it. The Medrash says she saw in him incredible potential. But not just potential to be a good guy, not just potential to be a good husband. She saw in him the potential for what? To be a Mora Hora'a B'Yisra. Which means what? A Gadol Hador. So you have to understand this. He's a shepherd. He might be a very nice guy, but he is a shepherd, an ignorant shepherd. And at 40 years of age, she somehow sees in this man the ability to become not just a Talmud Chacham, but a Gadol B'Yisra. So what happens? V'tikra Torah al Shemo, and she sees that he has the ability to be someone whom Torah will be called by his name. Halcha v'niskat shelo b'tzina. So she went and she got married to him secretly. Now the marriage has a little bit more information. Listen to this. Kevan shegadla, so apparently Rachel was very young when this happened. Kevan shegadla, ba'u aleha kol gidolim v'ashirim, v'lo haisa miskadesh eslohem. So the story goes on. Now Rachel comes of marital age. And what happens? You could imagine. The Gemara talks about that she was an exceptionally beautiful woman. She was very beautiful, and she was rich. Beautiful and rich. So you could imagine there's no shortage of the offers. So everybody's coming to her because they want to get married to her. So there were Gidolim, great Hamidi Chachamim, other rich men who all want her hand in marriage. And for some reason, she's refusing every single offer. Amar la Abiya, mipnei ma i'at miskadeshes. So her father says, Rachel, what's wrong? Right? So I guess at first Kalva Savua wanted her to be able to make her own decisions. But then he says, you know what? Come on, this is ridiculous. You're getting a lot of good offers. What's happening over here? So look what he does. Amad Abiya imen kol gidoli hador. Amra la hisnasi l'chol mishetirza. Sakaba Savua does something amazing. He gathers every great Talmud Chacham, puts them in a lineup, and says, Rachel, choose someone. Choose someone, right? Every eligible guy is here. You have your choice. But choose someone. At this point, Rachel has no choice but to come clean with her father. Amra lo, Miskadeshes ani la Akiva ro'echa. She says, Father, I have good news and bad news. Right? The good news is I found someone. The bad news is, at least for you, that he's your shepherd, Akiva. The Gemara says, Kevan sha'amra kach, hotziya mi beiso, vahorida hana min achasav. And again, at this point, the Medrash ends off with the same conclusion of the Gemara. He kicks her out of the house and prevents her, precludes her from getting any kind of benefits from his estate. So now what happens? So at this point in time now, Rachel is without a home. So what do Rachel and Rabbi Akiva do at this point in time? So there are two, it's like the split screen. So what does Rabbi Akiva do? Take a look at number 10. I'm just being a little bit out of order for just a moment. So the Gemara says, Ozel Yosef Trey Sarishinin Bebeirav. Rabbi Akiva goes off for 12 years to learn in Yeshiva. Now I just want to point out, it's an interesting point over here, that according to the Medrash, when Rachel was kicked out of her father's home, Rabbi Akiva actually came back from Yeshiva to help support her, because this woman who she kicked out of her, helped support her. See, actually, according to the Medrash, they didn't put on the sheet, he was home for a year. At that point in time, they had a child. They had a daughter. They had one child, Rabbi Akiva and Rachel, one child, a daughter. The Gemara doesn't tell us her name, but she also married a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Ben Azai, which we'll get to maybe a little bit later on. But we're going to leave out that little 1 year period there. So Rabbi Akiva is in Yeshiva. And what is Rachel doing? Listen, you'll see why this is so stirring. Look at number 9. Holcha v'yashva eitzel imo shel Rabbi Akiva. So what did Rachel do? She went to live with Rabbi Akiva's mother. She went to live with her mother-in-law. Because remember, she at this point in time has no family of her own. Right? She's been totally cut out from the family. She goes to live with her husband's mother. V'haisa socheres l'chavroseha. And she becomes a cleaning lady. She becomes a domestic helper. She cleans houses in order to be able to earn a livelihood. Chatzi schara ocheles v'shosa, v'chatzi schara mishageres l'Rabbi Akiva, shahayalom etor mipi Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yoshua. And half of her wages she would use to support herself and her mother-in-law, and the other half she would send to Rabbi Akiva so that he could continue in his learning. So listen to what the Medrash says. V'hayachi ger echad b'shchunoseha, shahaya mevaze u'mevaisha b'dvarim. And there was one man in her neighborhood, in Rachel's neighborhood, who would always embarrass her and humiliate her. And he would say about her, Amar, Ru'u shota zu, shekafra b'kavod beis adiyah. Look at this foolish woman who gave up so much. She gave up all the wealth and all the privilege of her father's home. And who did she get? Who did she marry? Some schnook, right? Who is this guy? So what is Rachel telling everybody? Oh, my husband's in yeshiva. He's learning Torah. This guy, your husband's not in yeshiva. Trust me. Trust me, he's not in yeshiva. He abandoned you. He figured he was going to marry you, get some money from the deal. He didn't get any money. He's gone. What do you think? He's actually learning in yeshiva? You think he's coming back to you? You fool. You foolish woman. You've given up everything for a man who took you for a ride and who you will never see again. Look at number 11. The Gemara goes on. Azul Yosef. Also Yosef tracing in the Beirav. So now, again, I cut out the middle part of the story, which is Rabbi Akiva going back and forth. You know, actually, let's skip to number 12, just for the sake of time. So in number 12, the Medrash now goes on. La'achar kama shanim ba Rabbi Akiva achshehu lamad kol ha-Torah kula uboin lefanav chaf dalid alpayim zugim tamidim. See, here's what's amazing. So now this is actually 24 years later, right? 14 years later. So what happens? Rabbi Akiva comes back and he has with him 24,000 students. Now it's actually machlokes how to read this. If it actually means 24,000 pairs, which would be 48,000 students, or if it means 24,000 students. So the 24,000 actually fits into the Gemara that we saw in Maseches Yevamos. Okay, he comes back with a lot of students. Uba Birosham ki Gavriel Birosh Kidoshim. And Rabbi Akiva is at the front. And they have to understand something. Rabbi Akiva has not seen his wife for over a decade. For over a decade. This entire time, what has she been doing? She's been working as a cleaning lady to try to support herself, her mother-in-law, and her husband. And he comes back now with all of these students. Ubo Baroshim Kigar Vil Barosh Kedoshim. Kevan Shera Oso Chiger Ba Oso Kavot Amra Tmiya Ani Im Nose Oscha Rabbi Akiva. So now that same man who was humiliating her for all of those years says, okay, you know what? I was wrong about your husband. He is a good guy. He's a great Rabbi Akiva. But you know what? There's no way that he is going to remain married to you. After all, now, he is the Gadol Hadar. He's the Gadol Hadar. He needs a wife with prominence as well. And you, who are you? You're nothing. Amra lo. So what does Rachel retort back to him? Shota. You are the fool. Misha hu dome le malachi hasharis. Kofer ba'aniya bas hashirim. Shiniskeres lechavroseho mishageres lo lebeis rabo. So she says, you fool. Do you think that this man, who is like an angel, is going to be interested in the external trappings of a wife? He knows that I scrubbed floors for him. He knows that I gave up everything for him. Trust me, you're the fool. He will come back to me. So the Gemara goes on. When Rachel was living in poverty for all of these years, and she was wearing rags, she was going out to greet her husband in rags. Amra lo chavroseha, sha'ali lach kelim na'im, ulifshi utzi'i l'grason. So her friends told her, borrow a dress. Borrow a dress, get dressed up. Your husband is coming. Your husband is coming, get dressed up beautifully to greet him. So what is she saying? Amra lahen, yodeya tzadik nefesh behemto. Actually quoting a pasuk from Mishlei, Shlomo Melech says, the tzadik knows the nefesh of his animal. What Shlomo HaMelech was saying is that tzaddik has such a sensitivity that he doesn't just have empathy for people, he has empathy for even animals as well. So Rachel was saying to her friends, you don't understand. The mesiras nefesh that I had for this man, I don't need to put on a nice dress. I don't have to go ahead and apply makeup. I don't have to make myself look all externally beautiful for him because he knows exactly what I did for him all of these years. Nafla al raglav v'aiza min hashakto. So it's a very moving Gemara. She falls on his feet, meaning there's so much emotion in this moment. There's not even words. It's not even a question of like what to say to him. Because what does Rachel see? You know, you have to imagine, what does Rachel see in that moment where she first lays eyes on her husband? What does she realize? What does she realize? What does she realize? That she was right. That she was right. Everyone else saw an ignorant shepherd. Everyone else saw a lowlife. Everyone else saw someone who was never going to amount to anything. And she saw a Gadol Hadar. And that moment, when she realized that all of that sacrifice, that all of that effort, she produced. It wasn't Rabbi Akiva. He did part of the work. But she did the heavy lifting. She produced a Gadol B'Yisrael. There were no words. So what happens? Literally, actually the Maharsha brings down that her knees gave out. Her knees gave out. When she saw what she had produced, her knees gave out. And she begins to kiss his feet. Now obviously, no one knows who this is. No one knows who this woman is. So what ends up happening? The Talmidim all try to get away. They think she's some crazy woman. Amar lahen, Rabbi Akiva says to them, the famous statement, Henichula, leave her alone. Shatora sheli v'shelachem shelahi. Because everything that I am, and by extension, everything that you are, is all because of this woman. An exceptionally moving story. But if you look at number 13, the Ben Yehoyada asks a very interesting question. The Ben Yehoyada writes, and you can see a little biography there. The Ben Yehoyada asks, he says, Yesh lomar, im hi nafsha avsa lihinasei labal, shutamut chacham. So the Ben Yehoyada says, if that's what Rachel wanted, to go ahead and marry a Talmud Chacham, kama chachamim hayu ba'osa hador, shehim vadai shleimim biras shamayim utznuim. So how many Talmidei Chachamim were there in that Jewish? Remember we saw in the Medrash, what the Medrash said, what did Kabbalah Savua do? He lined up all of the Talmidei Chachamim and said to Rachel, you have your choice. You have your choice. So if that's what she wanted, to be able to marry a Talmid Chacham, there were no shortage of people. V'tucha lihinase le'echad mehem birshus aviha. And not only that, but she could have married one of them with what? With the permission of her father. Right? She didn't have to endure this life of incredible pain and sacrifice, of having to be kicked out of the familial home, have to be cut off and have to work in such menial labor to be able to squeak by. V'lama bachra likach ama'aretz amenashe yomo tor v'yidat tamad chacham. So why does Rachel choose an ama'aretz? And maybe the Amar Amritz will become a Talmud Chacham, won't become a Talmud Chacham. So look what he writes. Look what he writes. He says, "V'gamu davar shlo midasa." Again, her father didn't want it either. V'nirali b'siyata d'shmayo, ki haisa isha maskelis v'chachmanis. Rachel was an exceptionally wise woman. V'yoda'as sheha'isha petura mitamut Torah. So Rachel understood that from a technical standpoint, a woman does not necessarily have the obligations of Talmud Torah that a man does. What does that mean? That a man has an obligation of kviyas itum Torah, to set aside time for Torah study each and every day. A woman doesn't have that same obligation. V'rak yiyeh lo chelek be'isek ha-Torah machmas baila. So how, let's say, does a wife, does a mother earn her portion in Talmud Torah? She does it primarily by being an enabler. By ensuring that she ensures that her husband will do it, that her children will do it, that her community will do it. She fulfills her role really by enabling others to help actualize their potential as well. Look what he writes. Ach amra zeachilek hamagia la mibayla hu betoras tzedaka ve'ina min hadin. So Rachel said something amazing. She said, I am not content with being an enabler. I want my own Torah. She said that's something amazing. Lachin bachra ba'adam shehu adayin lo gamir klal. Therefore she found the man in whom she saw potential, but yet what? Was totally ignorant. V'rak al yada yihyeh gamir v'chacham. And she found a man whom she could fashion, whom she could mold, whose spiritual personality she can create. Da'ata yihyeh lo chilek uzechus be'esek ha-Torah shelo mitzad hadin. So the Ben Yehoyada says something amazing. That Rachel was not content with being an enabler. Rachel was not content with gleaning her Torah through others. Rachel wanted to have a hand in creation of Torah. And therefore she sees this man who has the potential, who has the chomer, who has the building blocks, but who will only become who he can become because of her personal involvement. That's her choice of Rabbi Akiva. And the question is obvious. Why? It's beautiful. It's incredible. It's a stirring story. But why does Rachel need this Torah so badly? Why does Rachel, why is it not enough? She could have married the Gadol Hador. She did end up marrying the Gadol Hador, but that was only after many years. She could have married anyone whom she wanted. If she wanted a Torah Dikaos, if she wanted to raise beautiful children, she had her choice of marriage partners. Why Dafka did she need this? Why did she need to acquire Torah so terribly badly? She had to take this drastic step. So there's an amazing Mishnah on Pirkei Avos. Actually, we studied it yesterday on Shabbos. The Mishnah says the following, number 14. Shammai Omer, the great sage Shammai says the following. Asei Torah Chakeva. Make your Torah a fixed practice. And this has many different interpretations and many different understandings. But if you look at number 15, Rachaim Balazhiner says something absolutely astounding. Asei Torah Chakeva. What does it mean, make your Torah study a fixed practice? Rachaim Balazhiner writes, Ki kol ma sheha adam yogea lahasig hon hu letzorech achir. Rachaim Balazhiner advances something absolutely amazing. He explains that in life, you could acquire a lot of things. In life, you could acquire money, you could acquire possessions, You could even make for yourself a beautiful family, a beautiful home, a beautiful community. But you know what? All of those things can be taken from you. You could have a parnasa, you could have much money in the bank, and like that it's gone. You could have a beautiful family, and the truth is, there are no guarantees how long you will be able to hold on to it. But what Shammai is teaching us is there's one thing that is yours and yours forever. One thing that life can never take from you, and that's your Torah. When you acquire Torah, when we talk about Torah, we mean Torah in the most global sense. We mean, yes, the Torah you learn, the tzedakah you give, the chesed you engage in. Those things are yours and yours forever. No matter what circumstances are visited upon you in life, nothing, no one could ever take those things from you. That's what the Chaim Lajner says. He says, Kimo Sha'amru, Mun Vazamach, we skip down a little bit. He says, Avamasha Adam Yageh B'Torah, Hurak La'atzmo. When you have Torah, that's yours. Nothing in life can ever take that away from you. The Torah you learn, the chesed you do, the tzedakah you engage in, the mitzvot you perform, those are yours for all eternity. No matter how turbulent life becomes, nothing could ever strip you of the Torah that you have acquired. And that's why Shammai says, Ase Torascha Keva. Make your Torah. It's yours. It's yours. No one can take it from you. In fact, and I mentioned this yesterday in the Pirkei Avashir, you know, the Gemara says something amazing. The Gemara speaks about a Talmud Chacham, Shenishtachach Talmudo. A Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning. What does it mean, Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning? You know, Lo Aleinu, Rachman Al-San, we all see people who suffer from dementia, from Alzheimer's, and it breaks our heart because to a certain degree, not to a certain, for a very large degree, it's worse than seeing someone suffer from a debilitating physical ailment, right? Because the mind, we are who we are because of our mind. So the Gemara says, how do you interact with a Talmud Chacham who has forgotten his learning? Someone who once was a great Talmud Chacham and now can't recall his learning, can't teach. How do you interact with such a person? And the Gemara says, you have to treat him with the same exact kavod. Why? The Gemara says, because luchos, v'shivrei luchos munachin ba'aron. Because in the Aron, in the Ark of the Covenant that Klal Yisrael carried throughout the desert, there were two sets of tablets that were in it. There were the whole tablets and the broken tablets. The broken tablets, you couldn't learn from them. The broken tablets were not useful for the transmission of information. But the broken tablets nevertheless possessed their inherent sanctity because they were Torah. The Talmud Chacham who has forgotten his Torah is the broken tablets. Because once the sanctity is inscribed on the soul of the individual, that sanctity never goes away. Shivrei luchos. Ase Torascha Keva. So my friends, you see something amazing. What does Rachel want? What does Rachel want? What does Rachel want? This is not rhetorical. What does Rachel want? What does she want? No, she doesn't want participation. What she wants is the one thing that is yours and yours. She grew up in a rich home. She grew up with all the trappings of material wealth. She grew up with all incredible comfort. But Rachel was so intuitively smart that she understood, you have that today, but that's not a guarantee for tomorrow. Beautiful. So my father is fabulously wealthy and he uses his wealth in an appropriate way. But what happens when life robs him of that wealth? Because as the Gemara says, wealth and poverty is a gal hamisgalgel. It's a wheel. It's a wheel. And if you're on top now, sometime down the road, maybe it won't be you, maybe it'll be your children or your grandchildren, somebody's going to be on the bottom. So you're not going to be able to retain that forever. Rachel says, what's the one thing? I know what it means to own because we own everything. But what's the one thing I could own that will be mine and mine forever? My money can be taken from me. Baharai, your father took it from her. My identity can be taken from me. Baharai, people are humiliating her. But the Torah that I learn, the Torah that I engage in, the Torah that I create, that's mine and mine forever. And now we understand Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva was the primary disciple of who? Of who? Of Rachel. His Rebbe was his wife. He had other teachers who taught him some more information. But his Rebbe was Rachel. Because what Rabbi Akiva learns from his incredible wife is that Torah is the one thing that life can never take from you. And that's why I'm going to draw your attention back to the Gemara for just one moment. Go back, and we're going to wrap this up. But go back for just a moment to number 5. Just for a second. Just for a second. What happens with Rabbi Akiva? You know how that Gemara starts? It actually records two different opinions. Right? The Gemara begins by recording the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua. And what does Rabbi Yoshua say? Rabbi Yoshua says that even if you were married in your youth, make sure to be married in your older age as well. And even if you had children in your younger years, establish a family in your older years as well. And what does Rabbi Akiva come along and say? Rabbi Akiva doesn't talk about marriage. And Rabbi Akiva doesn't talk about families. What does Rabbi Akiva talk about? Lamad Torah bialduso, yilmot Torah bizignus. Rabbi Akiva says, excuse me, Rabbi Yoshua. Yes, I agree with you. It's a beautiful sentiment. But you know what? Life can take your marriage. And life can take chas v'shalom, your family. And life can take your possessions. And life could take anything and everything. But there's one thing that life can't take from you. And that's your Torah. That's your spiritual accomplishments. Those are yours forever. And therefore, says Rabbi Akiva, if you learned Torah in your youth, keep learning it. Because it's the one constant. And my friends, I can't tell you enough, please, when I speak about learning Torah, please do not minimize it to only include like what we're doing over here. Learning Torah means living Torah. Learning Torah means being an upstanding person. Learning Torah means engaging in chesed, giving tzedakah, being in Or LaGoyim. We're talking about learning Torah in the most global sense. So Rabbi Akiva says, excuse me, Rabbi Yoshua, but I don't think you should be focusing your attention on relationships, on marriage and children. Focus on the constant. Even if you engaged in the constant in your youth, engage in the constant in your old age as well. Because every stage of life brings its challenges. And every stage of life brings its difficulties. But there is one thing that is always yours, no matter what your circumstances are in life. And that's how Rabbi Akiva shifts the conversation to focus on the learning of Torah and the establishing of Torah students. Skip back to number 16. Look what David HaMelech says. David HaMelech says so profoundly, Lule soroscho shashuai azavadeti bionyi. David HaMelech, and those of us who learned him together on Wednesday mornings, have some glimpse into the terribly turbulent life of David HaMelech. So what does he say? If I didn't have your Torah, I would have perished in my affliction. And the Mitzudas David writes in number 17 something amazing. If I didn't have the simcha of your Torah, I would have perished in all of my suffering. So the Mitzudas David said, but one second, what does that mean? And look what he writes if you skip to the end. He says, She'ein hateva yore alav, ela al korchach davar melech shulton alateva van hagasola. You know the amazing part of spirituality is that the physical world has no grip on it. The physical world exerts its influence on every facet of life. It exerts its influence on your money. It exerts its influence on your marriage. It exerts its influence on your family. It exerts its influence on your health. All of the major areas of life, the world of Teva dominates. There's only one area of life that the world, that the mundane world, the physical world, cannot affect, and that is your acquired spirituality. And look at David HaMelech. David HaMelech had problems in his marriage. David HaMelech had problems with his children. David HaMelech had problems with his job, being king of Israel. David HaMelech even had problems with his health later on. This is a Kaddish Baruch Hu. My problems in this world are so overwhelming. Lule sorascha shashuai. If I didn't have the constant of Torah, if I didn't have the one thing that remains with me no matter what the other circumstances in life, azavarati ba'ani, I would have simply been swallowed up by all the difficulties of my existence. In number 18, you'll read it on your own, but I quoted it for you, just so you should see it. Rav Ephraim Oshri, who was the Rav of the Kovna ghetto, has an amazing insight where he writes, they asked him a tshuva. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, in the ghetto, had made a decree prohibiting Talmud Torah, public learning of Torah. And so people asked him, are we permitted to go ahead and risk our lives for the sake of learning Torah? And Rav Ashri responds, I can't tell them they have to risk their lives, but I also can't tell them that they're not allowed to. Because what else do they have in this world other than their Torah? They've been robbed of everything. They've been stripped of everything. How can I take away the one and only thing that they have left? And now we go back and we understand what in fact is happening on Lag BaOmer. The Simcha of Lag BaOmer, as we spoke about, is not the cessation of the death of the students of Rabbi Akiva. Because as he pointed out before, that doesn't make sense. That's a cause perhaps to cease mourning restrictions. But that doesn't seem to be a reason to celebrate. So what do we celebrate on Lag BaOmer? We celebrate the resilience of Jewish spirituality. We celebrate the Koach HaTorah. We celebrate the fact that life can take everything from you, but if you have Torah, if you have spirituality in your life, you have the ability to move on. You have the ability to navigate the stormy waters of life. If you have Torah, you have the ability to look whatever life throws your way square in the eye and say, I can overcome this challenge because I have the anchor, I have the life anchor of the continuity of the spirituality of Torah. And that's what happened to Lag BaOmer. Rabbi Akiva loses 24,000 students. So my friends, I would ask you, how do you go on after that? Right? You know, we've all had situations in life where we work very hard on something and then it doesn't pan out the way we like. And you know, it's crushing. It's debilitating. It's demoralizing. So can you imagine, you see your entire life's work die out in the span of 50 days. How do you go on? How do you go on? Not very simply. But if you're Rabbi Akiva, you look to who? You look to your Rebbe. And who was his Rebbe? His beloved wife, Rachel. What would Rachel have done in this situation? Well, we know what Rachel would have done. Rachel sacrificed anything and everything for the constant of spirituality. And Rabbi Akiva says, therefore, you know what? The 24,000 died, but the Torah that I have is still here. If the Torah that I have is still here, that means this is not the end of the road. It's a new beginning. The new beginning comes on the heels of a very rocky conclusion to the previous chapter. A chapter that came with the death of 24,000 promising and aspiring Talmidei Chachamim. But it's not over. And it's not over because I again have the consistency that Torah spirituality has to offer. That's what we celebrate on Lag BaOmer. That's why the Rama says, Noagin bo kitzas simcha. Is it a crazy celebration? It can't be a crazy celebration because the truth is, you know what? This new start came on the heels of unspeakable tragedy. But nevertheless, it's kitzas simcha because we see the Koach HaTorah. If you have Torah, if you have spirituality in your life, you have the one constant that the harsh realities of life cannot take from you. And when you have that, that's your life anchor, and that gives you the ability to weather any of life's storms. Take a look at number 21, and with this we'll conclude. Because now we understand what it is that we are celebrating on Shavuos. I want to make one thing very clear. The reality is that on Shavuos, we don't commemorate. Judaism doesn't commemorate anything. We don't look at historical events and say, oh, that happened X number of thousands of years. Just like on Pesach. What's the avodah on Pesach? Chayiv Adam Liros Es Atzmo Kiryat Mitzrayim. We draw on a historical event to create present meaning for ourselves. Same idea. We're not remembering Matan Torah. We don't remember the Sinaitic revelation. What are we doing? We are reliving it. That's why. When we read the Asaras HaDibros, what do we do in Shul? What do? We stand up. Why do we stand up? Why do we stand up? So the Rishonim explained, because when our great-great-great-great-great-grandparents stood at Har Sinai, they were standing when they received the Torah. So to our Shavuos, we stand. Why? Because we are receiving. So what are we receiving? 613 mitzvahs, a list of do's and don'ts. What are we receiving? Well, now we understand. From Rachel, from Rabbi Akiva, we understand that we are receiving the one tool in this world that allows us to meet all of life's challenges head on. And with this, look at number 21. Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzad v'chol la'asos esachukim ha'ilah v'atz mishpatim v'shamart v'asisa osam v'chol levavecha v'chol nafshecha. So today, now remember, what is Moshe Rabbeinu saying? He's saying this in Chumash Devarim, towards the end of Devarim. So today does not mean that the Sinaitic revelation. Today means a good 40 years later. But today, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is commanding you to do His mitzvos, and Rashi HaKadosh comments on number 22. What does that mean today? It's not today. It happened 40 years ago. Bechol yom yihyu be'inecha kichadoshim. Every day, the Torah must be new in your eyes. I have to tell you, this always bothered me. I don't know about you, I find this exceptionally difficult. To be able to say that it should have meaning every day, I understand. But to say it should have the new Torah smell each day, right? That when I go ahead and I do a mitzvah, wow, it's the first time I'm doing this. We're human beings. To be able to generate that first time excitement is exceptionally difficult. But I think perhaps what Rashi is saying is something different. Bechol yom yu beinecha kichadoshim means every single day brings with it what? Its new set of challenges. Every single day brings with it chadoshim. Every single day brings with it something that I perhaps did not have to face the day before, the week before, the year before. I never had. It's chadoshim. So how do I deal with the chadoshim? How do I deal with this particular challenge? I've never dealt with it before. And what does the Kodesh Baruch Hu say? What does Moshe Rabbeinu say? Bechol yom yu beinecha kichadoshim. No matter what the problem is, no matter what the challenge is, no matter what the circumstance is, no matter how overwhelming or daunting it may seem, even if it's a life circumstance that you have never dealt with before, there is one constant that will get you through it. And that's the constant of Torah-generated spirituality. When you have Torah in your life, you have the tools to be able to navigate through the most difficult of life circumstances. The greatest mistake we make in life is that we wait until we encounter challenge to then figure out how can religion help me through this. And the truth is, sometimes you're a little bit behind the eight ball if you do that. Because once you are already enmeshed in the difficult circumstances, it's much more difficult to be able to navigate your way out of it. You can, but it's just a more arduous process. But if a person builds a strong spiritual persona, not when times are difficult, but when times are good, then I am armed with the perspective to deal with the life difficulties as they come my way. And this, I know this is primarily Yeshua Lag BaOmer, but this is the Simcha of the Yom Tov of Shavuos. What do we celebrate? What do we celebrate? We celebrate the fact that God gave us the life playbook. He gave us the teacher's edition for something called human existence. And it's called Torah. You don't necessarily know how to use it, but there's one thing we know for sure, that if we arm ourselves with it, if we bolster ourselves with it, it will prepare us for dealing with all of the eventualities, all the difficulties of life. That is the Yom Tov of Shavuos. So in these next couple of weeks, as we prepare ourselves for Kabbalah Satorah, and again, not for remembering a historical event, but for trying to recreate for ourselves a Kabbalah Satorah, let us remember that what we celebrate on Shavuos is the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the greatest tool to weather all of life's difficulties and challenges. And our avoda during these days of Svir leading up to Shavuos and in the days and weeks and years after Shavuos, is to make sure that we have a spiritually rich diet. Make sure you are ingesting. You know, we all lead very manic lives. There's no question about that. And even though the Ben Yehoyada, and I'm not arguing the Ben Yehoyada, but the Ben Yehoyada says that women, you know, the Gemara says, that women don't have a technical obligation of Talmud Torah, I want to tell you something. Each and every one of you have an obligation for Talmud Torah. Because we live in difficult times, both personal difficulties and national difficulties. And if you don't have Torah as part of your everyday, when the difficulties come your way, and they do, you will not be sufficiently prepared. Man, woman, child, we have to make sure that we are utilizing this tool of the Ribono Shel Olam. And let us hope that in Yirtzeh Hashem, in these days and weeks leading up to Shavuos, and on Shavuos, when we recreate our Kabbalah Satorah, that we will draw our strength from Rachel, we will draw our strength from Rabbi Akiva, and we will realize that if we arm ourselves day in and day out with the beautiful, unadulterated spirituality of Torah, that we will be sufficiently prepared to deal with all of life's challenges. Thank you.